Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Ilona Europa, Accent on LA Talk Radio, Accent on London edition. I'm in London. Our guest is in Amsterdam. Hi, Janusz. How is your morning?
Let's put it this way. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. And wherever you are in the world, wherever you're going to watch this, it's a pleasure to be with you.
This is a wonderful, wonderful time. We have amazing weather right now. It's like a rain, but it's warm. So England is typical England. But I know that in Poland, we have so much sun. In America, so much sun. So we have a little bit break. How is Amsterdam for you?
Well, Amsterdam lately, for the last few days, roughly for about a week now, we've been having sort of thick cloud covering Amsterdam. So it's kind of rainy. There are moments where the sun shines through, but it's not the heat wave that most of the Europe kind of going through at this particular moment in time. So we are balanced, although it's nice to have a little bit of sun because that's always gives the a little bit of more, you know, like endorphins in your brain through your cornea. So it's always good. But, you know, you can't have everything. And hopefully the weather will get balanced soon. So
we are lucky anyway, wherever we are. So today our guest is Janusz Madej, who is an actor, director, producer, known for Shift. 2018, you premiered in Cannes Film Festival, Resolve, 2017. 11, 2014, Stigma, 2011, and today our main accent will be on a short, on a movie that is called Blue Glass.
Yes.
I'm hoping people are remembering that a few weeks ago we had a really, really nice interview with you, and I was just so happy to present you to the world. As you are originally from Poland, I am originally from Poland, and I really, really believe for years you are on a path to become amazing, amazing, and very, very known movie producer if you are not already known. And we will find out how many awards in recent years you received for your talent, for your production, for your movies. So again, we are very excited, but whoever wanted to hear part one of our interview, please research Accent on LA Talk Radio. Please scroll down, go to archive, and go through the shows. And one of most recent is interview number one with Janusz Madej. Janusz, this is a very special occasion because when I see how many awards and how many people love your movie, and I need to be there with you and just be proud of you, and hopefully people will be very, very interested to see trailer, which will attach hopefully in the end of the Facebook video, and just people be following your career and what is the next step. So today I would love to dedicate our interview to you. Recent awarded film that is called Blue Glass. So can you tell us what is the most important thoughts, premises behind this movie?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me, Ilona. It's a pleasure to again get connected through Zoom. It's nice to also have a connection with your audience. Thank you for having me back. Last time when we met, we kind of dive into my past and a little bit of the, you know, what happened the last couple of years for me in my filmmaking and acting career. And you basically saw what's going on now on Facebook with the amount of official selections and award that our film Blue Glass is receiving. Let me first say something that needs to be clarified. I always try to stay modest, and just the fact, let me put it this way, not every festival is equal. We have roughly 10 entry-level professional festivals to the degree that they are opening a gateway to potential opportunities in the future. It can, you know, we can name it Cannes Film Festival, we can name it Berlinale, AFI, we can name it Sundance, we can name it Tribeca, we can name it Toronto. Usually these festivals, they have a film market, and selection for these festivals usually equal or not only prestige, but also possibilities of maybe, you know, getting some connection with someone, and that can sort of be a fruitful thing for your future in terms of your career. You might get a producer interested in your project. You can pitch something to somebody. And through that, you kind of can progress further into your filmmaking or acting career. Now, as my dear friend Joe Moulton once said, she was a director of a Temecula Valley Film and Music Festival, some festivals are fluff. Mm. And what I mean by fluff is it's more, I mean, it's, you know, it's nice to be selected or nice to get an award somewhere. It's undoubtedly all, it's a dream of every independent filmmaker to actually make a movie where you sent around and this movie has a very great reception. But once again, not every festival is equal. And that's why I always sort of have a, you know, my eye on the ball. But I'll just give you one example. If you have a Cannes Film Festival, do you know roughly how many submissions per year Cannes Film Festival receives?
Thousands.
In a short category, it's often over 10,000. And usually the way the festival jury works is that you have roughly sometimes three people that are watching particular short. And if two of them during the actual screening of the film will say, okay, enough, it's not going, we are not selecting it, they press the button and that's it. Your film at that moment, particular moment, is stopped, you're going away. So if you don't necessarily have a credited actors, or you are not associated in a, with a particular producer or some famous person that is kind of taking on their back and kind of showcasing the film with you, it's extremely difficult to get into that entry level, professional level. However, you have tons of film festivals. And these days, because everything is changing because of Corona, we are more into in a transition where actually online festivals or monthly festivals are popping up like, you know, like flowers around forest after rain. I mean, you know, people are now changing their whole platform understanding of what film and how you can show film to the public and what can you do differently. And it used to be a big no-no to expose your short film on online or whatnot. Now everything is kind of shifting. So when you're submitting to a Tribeca or to Cannes or to Berlinale, your film, your short film, every submission, let's say your short film will be over 50 euro. Let's say 50 to 75 euro. For a feature film, it might be over 100, okay? So it's an investment in itself to send your film to festivals that you possibly, there's, being selected to that festival is like winning a lottery. So you have to be reasonable. You have to look at what are the possibilities, and you have to find venues for the best possible venues for the product that you have. Now, a lot of festivals can be cheaper. A lot of festivals are, let's say, 30 euro, 20 euro, et cetera, et cetera. However, when you start winning, these festivals are actually approaching you. So I have, on a weekly basis, I have festivals from all around the world asking me to join their festival and offering 50% discounts, even more, just to make sure that actually things are shifting. Because what happens is that when your film is award-winning film, you're starting to give a variety to that particular festival, because then suddenly they are jumping on a bandwagon of that train, which is the festival circuit, and they want to get sort of famous from associated with a film that is actually winning film. So it's one of those things that I needed to clarify upfront, because that would make me very immature by flexing here and telling you that, Janusz and his film are sort of a last Coca-Cola on a desert, and we are the this and that. I prefer a little bit humble approach and realistic approach to the level that at this moment the Blue Glass and so on presents itself. Now, how did the Blue Glass came about? And this is a pretty cool story. After the, as you mentioned, we made films like Shift, and before that, Resolve was made. The actress Henrietta Bryant, who I mentioned already in the previous podcast, she's a British actress residing in Amsterdam for 25 years or so. She basically approached me after a project. We did another project called Arcanum. We were coming back in the train from the 48-hour film project, Eindhoven, and she said, "Listen, Janusz, I had this idea for a film. I never wrote a script in my life. I went to this a workshop of a British actor. His name is escaping my mind right now, but he's a known British actor who works in the theater on television. He did a workshop, a writing workshop, and on that workshop, she wrote 3-page, you could call it form of synopsis of, a sort of an idea for a film, but very kind of rudimentary, full of dialogue, and you can see that it was the first time, someone's tries for the first time write a some form of script or blueprint for something that can be developed for film. Well, I sat there and she asked me, "Oh, Janusz, would you be interested in working on this film? Would you be interested in directing this and whatnot?" I said, "Listen, you know me. At the end of the day, I don't sign my name and, I try to maintain quality. So at this particular moment, I'm not interested. We would have to rewrite the whole thing. I would have to drop in some Janusz, magic there and make sure that is full of depth and duality and a lot of, it needs to be developed. The whole structure needs to be changed. The film needs to totally evolve. Fine, yes, please." And for 3 months, we would meet through Skype, not Zoom, but through Skype. We were, we would sit, she in her place, I in my place, and we would basically write the script. I was very eminent that Blue Glass needed to be, because the original synopsis she sent around to, some filmmakers here in Amsterdam, and nobody really, picked it up. Because if you are long enough in the industry or you are a filmmaker, there are clear guidelines of how the script needs to be formatted. And it's very easily, you can weed out professionals from amateurs based on that fact alone. You look at the script like, "Oh, this person is an amateur. I don't want to work with this person. Oh, this person actually knows how to formate the script, how it's written. It's interesting. I'm getting into it. Maybe it's something interesting for me. And she shopped around Amsterdam, and nobody really showed interest because of the level of the initial idea. But we came along. For 3 months, we were writing the script. And in the end, you know, I was very eminent that it needs to have as little dialogue as possible. Because in film, we show, we don't tell. Okay. Yep. And the more dialogue you use for an exposition purposes, the less intellectually driven film becomes, because the easiest way is to verbalize something. Okay. But the smarter the audience, the less you need to. Yes. So it's you start working on body language, you start working on other things in filmmaking, sort of vocabulary, that you are starting to communicate with your audience without actually using dialogue. Dialogue is the easiest way to show an exposition in the film, and it's the most amateur-like. And this is what most amateur filmmakers or entry filmmakers do. They focus on the dialogue, where they are actually forgetting what's under the dialogue. And initially, when you write a script, what you actually want to do, you do first draft, second draft, third draft. Why do you do this so many drafts? It's already done after a couple of drafts. It's already pretty formatted. Well, often what you do, by the end, you kind of look back and you think, what do I don't need? What dialogue I don't need? How can I show what I'm trying to give it to the audience? How can I communicate that? So what we did, basically, we prepared the script. The script was well formatted, and Henrietta had a association with SAE Institute, which happened to be a very interesting coincidence, because SAE Institute is a film school. It's all around the world. It's a franchise. It started as an audio engineering school, and then it evolved into filmmaking. I think now they're kind of going into game design. And here in Amsterdam North, there is an SAE Institute, which I was associated from 2000, roughly five. I started there as an actor. So they would be calling me, you know, that's how I was building up my sort of a reel when I was, you know, beginner, so to speak. And I would do some short films there. So I knew the building, I knew the people, but I'm one of those guys that I don't like, you know, I don't try to use the contacts. Dutch have a saying, vriendjes politiek, and that is political friends. So sometimes you can be very talented, but if nobody knows about you, don't exist. However, if you know a particular person who knows the person, it's those 6 degrees of separation of Kevin Bacon that actually you can reach the person that you want to get. So I knew I don't want to cut corners. I don't want to do this film based on some form of a digital camera or something like that. You know, I knew this film needs to be done in a professional manner. I want it to have a film look. And there are a couple of cameras that are expressing this film look. The high-end camera that is used on most productions these days is Arri camera. And a lot of people are also using a red camera, okay? And I thought, okay, blue glass shot on red. One of the guys that worked on a film came up with this line, you know, blue glass shot on red. Yeah, it sounds like a nice marketing ploy. SAE Institute have a nice camera. Why wouldn't we make an appointment with the heads of the department of the film school? So if I don't have money to actually make the movie, but I don't want to show a lower quality, let's find ways to find people who are able to invest in the production. And of course, we have to give something in return. So Henrietta had a contact with Bruce Gibb, who is a sound design and a sound sort of head of the department there. I said, okay, if we're going to pitch for the sound equipment, why can we not pitch to the SA Institute for, you know, for the camera? And I would take the students in my film. I would take them in the entry level in the crew, perhaps, give them some opportunity that before they leave school, they already have a credit on IMDb on a short that, you know, will go into festivals. This is what happened. We met up in their office, and I pitched them the whole project, scene by scene of how I see this film evolving, et cetera, from a beginning of a body language of, you know, this sort of closed body language. By the end of the pitch, it was kind of like, you know, a bit mouth open. And I'm like, okay, this is actually kind of nice that they are interested in the project. Okay, Janusz, what do you need? And I said, listen, of course, sound equipment is great, but we would like to shoot it on red. So we would like to your camera. And of course you have lenses for up and coming or young filmmakers. It's not always the camera, guys. It's the lenses. Okay. Camera is important. It has a certain grain, et cetera, depending on which one you choose, but it's the lenses. So they had also nice lenses there, lighting equipment. And I said, listen, if you give us all of that for the amount of time that we need for shoot, what we're going to do, we're going to basically take students, if you like, give an opportunity to students, whoever wants to volunteer additionally over their curriculum, and you know, you're going to get a special thanks. In fact, I will even give you an associate credit in my film. So film is made by Panil Films Production in association with SAE Institute.
Beautiful.
They agreed. And originally, the film, I kind of guesstimated 3 shooting days. Okay. Now, this is something for young up-and-coming filmmakers. If you don't have a budget, if you don't have money, don't run around and pitch project to your colleagues or to your filmmakers that you want to work with and ask them to participate in a project that is 5 days or 10 days or whatever. Because nobody will invest in your project. You know, it's very difficult for a director of photography to commit himself for 5 days to a project if during that time he might have a possibility to get a commercial where he will make couple of thousand euro. It's not possible. However, if you will pitch 2 days, 3 days, and most filmmakers, they are really eager to do something special, because if they are busy with a commercial work, they don't have as much freedom as they would have on a particular independently produced short film. So this is what we did. We kind of first planned 3 shooting days. It ended up being 5, but we did not want to cut corners on the quality. We found a wonderful location for a sort of a psychiatric center near Amsterdam, and that's another thing for independent filmmakers: location, location, location. Actors, I mean, you know. To find actors for your film, it's not a difficult thing, because there is a lot of independent actors, whether it's London or England or Holland, you know, wherever you are. If you're long enough in the industry, around, you will find people that eventually you will want to have in your film. Of course, it's ideal if you know some very famous actor or someone that you can ask, or would you be willing to for a half day or for a day to come, and it would add to a production value of your film. However, if you don't have that type of possibility and you're trying to enter the industry, or you're trying to basically work on your craft, there's so many people around that you can hopefully use. However, locations are extremely important. So, you know, people also forget that it's not always not only a story. It's what on the screen that kind of showcases a production value of the film. is, you know, you can have also, people are drawn to acting, people are drawn to characterization, and they might dismiss whether the walls are, you know, this color or that color, or if, you know, symbolically they are painting or whatever you want to say, that's additional things. But location is extremely important. So we did find the suitable location, which in our group, we chose a apartment, sort of a studio apartment with a long corridor in here in Amsterdam, in Hilversum, which is Dutch Hollywood. It's where all the TV production companies are, film production companies are. We found like a 1950s psychiatric ward there, which has been converted to different things. But the building itself looked very, very interesting. So we found our psychiatric center. And basically we went for it. We went into production. It's, as I mentioned, after 5 days of shooting, we had to adjust at some point because the director of photography, Alessandro, we were shooting during Easter. So, you know, it's kind of, I chose Easter because I knew that the boys in the school, I chose 5 guys from the school, from the SA Institute, and I knew that often people have more time during these periods than when it's actually working time, working period, etc. So we did it in the Easter, and Alessandro had family, you know, he has a family, and at one point after 3 days, he says, listen, it's getting longer than I kind of signed out for. I have to bounce. So he bounced. He left the project. We immediately jumped onto Jos, who is a great director of photography here, with his whole, you know, he has a basically production company truck with all the lights, with cameras that you can dream of. I mean, you know, like there is a camera, a pocket camera called Blackmagic, a little camera that shoots 4K. He has that. He has a ARRI camera, like high-end production value, you know, equipment. So Jos came in, and it was, in a way, everything happens for a reason. It was a godsend, and he just came in at so much additional production value, because we also, you know, I'm one of those filmmakers, I like symbolic things, and I a lot of up and coming and young filmmakers, they are not using a tool called insert or cutaway. And what that actually means is, whenever you're shooting particular scene, whether it's a dialogue scene or whatever, noticed when you next time you watch a high-end Hollywood film or even a European production, that we have close-up of, like, they are talking, but they're suddenly close-up of their hand doing something with their hand, or picking up the drink, or these little close-ups of what you're doing gives an indication to the audience of the internal sort of dialogue of the character by internalizing through doings. And majority of time, what we are doing, our body language is extremely important. So just shooting that little moment where there's a moment of tension and I just show little movement of the hand, the audience already know, oh, he's uneasy about what he said or what she said. I don't have to spell it out for them. The cutaway is a little bit different. The cutaway is, for instance, a dog barking on the other side of the street, and suddenly we bounce back to that dog, and then we come back, and that can be used very well for for instance, when you're trying to symbolically show something or tell something. So you show nature, or you show. So it's a parallel, makes your conversation or particular scene deeper. Malik, you know, Mr. Malik is using that a lot, and he's a wonderful director. So At the end of the day, we shot Blue Glass. Was a wonderful experience, and you know, the film basically, when you finish the film, when you finish principal photography, one of the main thing is afterwards is, okay, the post-production starts. So you actually shot the footage. Now you have to edit it. And, you know, in today's world, back in the day when we had film on a celluloid, being an editor was an extremely important job, because not many people wanted to look through the celluloid, cut it, you know, glue it back, et cetera, then make a through telecine form of process, a print out of it and whatnot. Now, in a digital age, everybody, including their mother, have a iMovie or a Final Cut Pro or whatever, and everybody is an editor, but you need to know what you're doing. So, you know, it's also a craft. It's also, you need to know what frame rates, and basically you need to upheld the standard. So a lot of filmmakers, they turn into a Adobe Pro as the sort of program to edit. I decided to edit movie myself, not because I'm vain this way, but I always feel it's your baby.
You knew.
And there are two philosophies, you know, about that. Because sometimes when you're too close to the film, your writer, your director, you, all these things, it's in general in Hollywood, for instance, they don't like these type of filmmakers. Soderbergh is one of these filmmakers that actually in his movie, he does multiple things. Sometimes he puts aliases. Mm-hmm. Where in Hollywood, it's not. We have a unions. So if you are in a director union, no, you're not going to be DPing Ridley Scott when he first originally came to Hollywood. He liked to operate his own camera. No. You are director. Your job is to communicate your vision to that guy who is holding a camera, and he's in a different union. You are in a different union. Don't mix the two. Okay.
I want to take a second moment break, because you are talking to us and it's amazing. I wish we will be having audience of dreamers and people who want to enter your business of filmmaking, and you make this so clear and so friendly, almost like parent take the hand of the child and say, this is the way that I am doing. It's already probably is working for a lot of people. I want to communicate this with you. If we are talking about the movie that we didn't yet mention what the movie is about. You made this so interesting, because the process of making the movie that soon will be find out from you what the movie is about, just you show that the process, with the process is something that stops people from doing anything. They say that, okay, I got the idea. I have no way. Even I cannot see 3 days ahead. How can I see the ready product? But you are trying, and you are explaining this in the most sweet, wonderful way. And I'm listening. I'm hoping people, even who are not into movie business, they also will learn so much. I didn't know that, like you say, it's not so good to do this job, that job, but like you say, we'll come back to it. You, in this movie, you wanted to do more. You wanted to be involved in editing, you were directing, you were acting, you had small role. You still decided to be part of this movie in so many ways, not even saying that from the beginning you were co-writing script, and then you took, you know, the time and all your emotions to just find the right people who will help you to create the movie with the best camera. Like you said, that everything has the best quality that you can offer to this movie. So I just wanted to summa summarum, because I don't know if I ever had an interview like that I just I'm just sitting and listening and going with you through all this process. So thank you for that. And hoping again, whoever stop now, they will, because I know I read so much about movie. I saw the trailer. So I think like I know a little bit more. So I'm saying this movie is very, very special. So all the journey that you're telling us will get us to the point that will explain to people why you decided to take on this project and why right now is getting so many awards, so many people really want to know you and know what you did to this movie. So can you maybe first tell me, I know you'll be coming back to where you ended. I want to know why Blue Blast? Because, you know, I read something very, very special, I think, on one of your sites that you say that, and I don't know if this has something to do with your movie.
Yeah.
That you are following the footsteps of Polish master directors like Krzysztof Kieślowski, Roman Polański. You are specialized in affecting the viewer's subconscious mind to the techniques like neuro-linguistic programming, which I think in this movie, which you need to tell us right now, the story, a little bit story behind, because people will understand how tense the movie is, how all of the things that you are talking about is so important. Not so many dialogues, great movie score, the music score, all of that is also important. So what is this technique? Neuro-linguistic programming. Is this through the body? Is this through the mind? Please, please tell us. This is a beautiful mind.
So That's another podcast in itself, because neuro-linguistic programming is such a broad subject that I could talk for hours about. But to kind of sum it up, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, is a science that has been developed in 1970s. And basically, it's an understanding that you have a conscious and subconscious mind, okay? And like, just listen to my voice right now. Right now, I'm talking to your conscious mind. So it's been understood that only between 5 and 15% of your functioning is your conscious mind, okay? The other 85%, which is more sort of to do with the emotions and the things that we are pushing into, we don't want to deal with, is on an unconscious side. Carl Jung, the psychologist, was huge on that. And if you are able to affect the subconscious mind of the viewer, that's in essence is the goal of a filmmaker, not to subconsciously influence the person, but when you're watching a film, you are actually being put in a form of a trance. You are locked in a room which is dark. You have this big screen, and when you are watching film, your brain goes in a particular channel that is susceptible to a hypnosis. So why do we get lost in films? We get lost in films by watching the film. We are watching something that we truly feel that it's a reality, and we are experiencing what's on the screen in our heart by being associated with the experiences of what actors go through. Mm-hmm. Now, if that's the goal of the filmmakers, to truly make you believe that what's on the screen is real, there are techniques for that. And this is why I gravitated towards NLP, because just as an example, right now, there are different techniques. There's a technique called voice anchoring. So right now I'm talking to your conscious mind, and you hear me talking to your conscious mind. However, the second I go into here, I'm right now talking to your subconscious mind. And this is why, because it's sensualized, you know, and you feel that. This is why in commercials, when we watch commercials, the commercial people are not talking about, hi, how are you? Buy this product. Why wouldn't you buy this product? It's beautiful. No, buy it now. You need it. You understand what I mean. What? You understand what I mean? These things are, once you've been pointed out, you cannot be fooled. Because once you understand the science, once you understand an eye accessing cues, and understanding that, in fact, what we are doing, we are remembering things in pictures, in sound, auditory, and also, so you have the hemisphere, left hemisphere, and the right hemisphere. And by understanding of where the eyes go as you are accessing these things, you can very clearly digest a person in terms of their, are they telling the truth? Are they lying? Are they moving their eyes in the area where it's actually creation of a memory instead of recalling? And just by that knowledge, your filmmaking capabilities as a director, whatever, goes, you know, so much into, you know, a future that a lot of people are dismissive of it because they don't understand it. Once you master that aspect, you know if your actor is actually performing the scene the way you want it because you know that they believe in it so much that they tell the truth or not. So that's a little overview of NLP. I'm diving into it.
Wonderful. You're saying that this is like so many podcasts that we could do on amazing topics.
That's why I'm moving on. I'm moving on from this. We're jumping into Blue Glass. Let me read it for you. The synopsis for this film, because you asked me what Blue Glass is about.
Yes.
And we are kind of by the end of the podcast. And now I will tell you what is it about. So the actual synopsis on IMDb says this: after a decade of struggling to come to terms with his comatose wife, Alice's deteriorating condition, Adam accepts the unusual offer from a pioneering doctor that will aid his grieving process. But what happens when three become crowd? And how far does the rabbit hole go when you are lost in an illusion of reality?
Illusion of reality.
It's sort of convoluted idea, but I always knew this film will be surreal. So masters like David Lynch or filmmakers which are giving different points of view where you are not sure if this is a dream, if this is reality. That's where the aspect of hypnotic aspect in our particular story comes into play. Because basically this film is multi-layered. You have an idea that someone who had a wife who for 7 years been sort of in a vegetable-like state, he's finally letting her go. He kind of feels that, okay, it's enough. I need to move on with my life. However, as a last resort, let me consult this particular doctor who have a particular new technology. We are not pointing out exactly what it is, and this is why I remove the dialogue when the doctor is sort of explaining to the protagonist of what he's going to do, that it's a DNA, it's cloning, it's this and that. I don't want it to specify it. I want it to the audience to kind of have a free mind. He basically creates the other Alice for this gentleman to help him with the grieving process. And the new Alice comes in. She's a sort of a form of a robot, you can say, form of a Blade Runner type, android type, but biological, non-technological, but biological.
Great.
And she comes into his life, you know, suddenly it's like some man's dream. Suddenly he's swapping his wife for a perfect copy of his wife from 7 years ago. She comes in, they have wonderful sort of emotional sexual encounter pretty much right away. But very soon she's also realizing that, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not real. And if I'm not real, is he really in love with me? However, because she's a form of clone, she's connected with the other person. She's connected with the one that is still sleeping, the one that is still unconscious. And they feel each other. And in the moment of the closeness of the sexual intercourse, the real Alice awakens from coma. She's sickly, she's not feeling well. And he gets a phone call from the hospital. The lady actually is awake. So he takes her home, but now we have a very strange situation where you have two people that look the same. One of them is sickly, needs to be cared for, and the other one is fresh and wants to have fun and is eager. What is our main character has to do? He is not sure. And there is a twist in the story. First we have a one twist, and then by the end we kind of make it even a different twist, where a lot of festival jury writes to me afterwards. They ask, Janusz, what our jury deliberated, what did the ending mean? What did the ending exactly mean? Well, I know what I wanted to present to the audience, but I often don't want to spell it out because film is, I feel it's a subconscious medium. So how you experience particular movie might be slightly different than someone else. By specifying something, you kind of removing that layer of intrigue, that layer of, oh my gosh, I discovered things.
I understand this way. Oh my gosh, how did you feel? Is this, you know, I got this from this ending. I love this because...
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, Stanley Kubrick once said a word, a sentence that just stuck with me, and this is my maxima. I will not paraphrase it perfectly, but I will do it at my best job. Whenever you try to communicate something, whether it's an emotion, thought, or idea, and you're doing directly, it only penetrates an inch. However, if you let the other person figure out what you're aiming at, the discovery of that idea penetrates their heart and stays there forever. Because one is me telling you, and one is I am bringing you to the realization, and you figure out yourself, and that is going to intensify your discovery because it's me, I figure it out. So,
you know, it's like a really, really almost school of life, because we are not only talking about movie, we are talking about day to day relationships.
You know? Movie is life. Movie is in its perfect idea. Movie is depiction of life. It's, you know, that's what I always say. That's the division between theater and film. Theater is also depiction of life, but in a different medium where you have to project and you have to, you know, in film, everything needs to look like it's real life. And there is a clear difference between actual depiction of life in American films, where things are bigger, the actors are a little bit, it's a slightly different style, where in Europe, we are really, really diving into filmmaking, which is almost like, wow, you know, a fly on the wall and a sort of almost documentary, where we're going in reality, we are trying to depict real reality. Now, Blue Glass is stylized, so I took my original education that I had from LA Film School and what I've learned in Hollywood, and I presented it with that layer of art house cinema for the European audience. We are happy that the film is very well received. Already 24 different festivals select the film. Half of it we won. On some festivals we won multiple categories. On this film fest, we won 5 best film, best science fiction film, best director, best screenwriters, best DP. So these things are very encouraging for the whole team. As I pointed out in the beginning of the interview here, not every festival is equal, but we are, you know, it's a joy because you put a lot of months of hard work and everybody put so much heart into the project that you honestly want to make sure that it will be shown somewhere that is well received. And it also is beneficial for future projects because people see like, hey, well, this person is doing something possibly interesting, that if I jump on that bandwagon with this person, maybe we will create something special next time. And that's the journey of Blue Glass, Shot on Red, in association with SA Institute. We are very proud of the project, and I couldn't be happier with the whole, you know, maybe I'll thank them now. You know, Henrietta, who was a wonderful a partner in crime in this particular project, did wonderfully. Not only as an actor, she plays two roles in the film. We did not use green screen. We just used very interesting blocking to have two actors interact with one another. And we tried to do it in a clever way. So she did two roles. She also co-wrote the script. I pull her into as a producer. So, you know, there's so many people. Marcel, Hank, who is playing our Dr. Koskins. You know, Alessandro, who was our first DP. Jos, who jumped in and wonderfully, compliment. Pavle, who was our production design. I mean, there's so many people in the team that you know, over 30 people that are truly very special to this project. All the students of SAE, I'm very grateful for your passion. And, you know, now we are going towards, you know, better and bigger things, hopefully, looking into a new project called Legendary, which I wrote last year, inspired by the lockdowns. And that might be something pretty cool. It's going to be a project, hopefully, retro style, thriller in a mold of A Rear Window, a Hitchcock film. Probably most of the listeners, those who are a little bit of age, remember Rear Window, in sort of mixed with The Purge. Yeah. So that will be the next project. We'll see how things will go. And it was a pleasure. I know that we are kind of coming into that moment where we are kind of winding down. So it was really a pleasure.
I know you will be back, you know, and I cannot even not have you in a few months again, because we'll be having something to talk about. We'll find a great topic. And you are giving us also advices, not only about movie producer life, but this is a lot of things we can take to our lives and understand that, like you said, life is a movie. Movie is a life. You know, we are living practically our own movies. We are looking at the street and everybody passing us by. They don't dialogue to us. They don't communicate. But one look to the left, to the right, we already can build up story in our minds who the person is, what the person looks like, why she's acting, he acting this way. It's amazing. We don't know this, but our consciousness is like 85%. We really deeply receive this type of contact.
Stimuli. Yeah.
So you made me think so much after our conversation. I will be even thinking more about what you said. I love our interviews because they are just so beautiful, full of information. You are a wonderful, wonderful teacher. And I cannot wait when you will be just talking to students on a normal basis, you know, in LA, in Poland, and whenever you will be. You have so much to say and you present this so beautifully and so honest. So I know that your life will be beautiful. You'll be having so many great projects that will take you higher and higher and higher. They just must, you know. But in the meantime, you enjoying your ride. Just I will say congratulations. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you for letting me show my passion and share my passion for filmmaking. It's truly, you know, it's like I could say I'm obsessed with film. For me, film is something very, very important in my life. And I'm very passionate about it. And I always like to share my passion with other people. And thank you so much, Ilona, for giving me, again, opportunity to be acquainted with your audience. It's a pleasure, as always, to get connected with you. And yes, thank you for giving me platform to share a little bit stories about Blue Glass and the filmmaking process that we
people can go. And, we are talking to Janusz and Madej, but the people can find a trailer, they can find more information about the movie.
Yes. I mean, there is, we are on Instagram. I mean, you can follow me at Janusz Madej 11. We have also, for a particular film, for the actual film, we have a side there. It's blue-glass-the-film on Instagram. We also have a Facebook page. If you type in Blue Glass, you will be transferred to the main page. you type my name, full name, you will be able to also find me on Facebook. So we are all connected. It's a wonderful time to use the platforms of social networking. And once again, Ilona, thank you so much for supporting independent filmmakers and thinkers. And, it's wonderful that what you're doing, not only for a Polish community, but also around the world. I know you're being watched in Los Angeles and all around the world. So
this show, Accent, almost 10 years and millions of people are listening and hundreds of thousands downloading our show. So I'm hoping people can always come back, listen, and download. Because, again, if they go to LA Talk Radio, to archives, they can scroll down, they can listen or download the show and listen over and over and just learn and listen to you forever. So thank you so much for today. Till next time, congratulations. Cannot wait for more. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be with you.
You're listening to Accent On with Ilona Europa right here on LA Talk Radio.